You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, nobody likes a show-off. And Joseph was a show-off. You have to have some sympathy for his brothers when he makes that statement that goes like this: "Listen to this dream that I dreamed. There we were, binding up our sheaves in the field, and suddenly my sheave rose and stood upright, and then your sheaves gathered all around it and bowed down to my sheave." Those are fighting words, friends. That's all there is to it. Joseph was already, according to the storyteller, the favorite son of his father Jacob, who would later be renamed Israel, and that's another story, with a bunch, 11 brothers, imagine that, hearing this kind of statement, "Let's be real." It's not a surprise that there was going to be some sort of physical violence involved, right? Well, of course, given the history of this marvelously dysfunctional family, should we be surprised at all by this story? Remember, this was the family of Sarah and Abraham, with whom God established the covenant of land and children. It was the same covenant and blessing that was passed on to their son Isaac. Of course, that's after Hagar and Ishmael were exiled. It was the same family that saw Isaac and Rebekah eventually give birth to the boys Esau and Jacob, the same family where Jacob tricked Esau out of his birthright, being the next to receive Isaac and essentially God's blessing and covenant. And how can we forget that Joseph's father, Jacob, and the intrigue surrounding his marrying the daughters of Laban, Leah, and Rachel? Remember how Jacob had desired Rachel and worked for Laban for 7 years, but instead was tricked into marrying Leah. And in order to marry Rachel, he had to work another 7 years. And that was followed by what we might call the baby birthing contest. So put your seatbelts on, folks. First, Leah, the scorned wife, had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Rachel was, according to the storyteller, apparently barren. So she did her "let's be like Sarah" thing and had her servant Bilhah take her place with Jacob, who then gave birth to Dan and Naphtali. Leah, of course, was upset by this, who was also at that point experienced infertility. Now, mind you, that was already after having 4 children. And she provided her servant Zilpah to Jacob, who gave birth to Gad and Asher. It's becoming a little bit of a soap opera here, right? Well, we're not done. We're not done. Leah, we are told, again regained her fertility and gave birth herself to Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah, the one girl, probably the one rational thinker in the whole bunch. Then Rachel apparently became fertile, and then popped out Joseph and Benjamin. Now, friends, like I've said before about these stories, I can't make this up. I'm not that creative. So if you've been counting along the way, this adds up to 13 children, 12 boys, 1 girl. Jacob, Leah, Rachel, Zilpah, and Bilhah were certainly doing their part about bringing about the offspring like the stars in the heaven that had first been promised by God to Sarai and Abram. So are we surprised, friends, given this context, that there was some dysfunction and a little bit of sibling rivalry? Well, eventually, as the story tells us, there was a plot to murder Joseph by his brothers. But a little bit of reason prevailed, and instead of killing him, they instead threw him into a pit and sold him into slavery. And then to cover their tracks, as the story tells us, they told their father Jacob that he had been killed by a wild animal, and they presented Joseph's coat to their father covered in blood. Well, Joseph, as you might remember, wound up as a ruler in Pharaoh's court through a very, very strange set of circumstances, but that's a story for another day. And there were any number of times where it seemed as if Joseph was going to meet his demise. But the situations seemed to continually redeem themselves, and he instead became a favored figure. And it reached a climax When Joseph's family finally made their way to Egypt because of famine, and they were shocked to learn what had happened to Joseph, that he had found favor with Pharaoh and was elevated to a position of high responsibility in Pharaoh's court. So it's no surprise that these brothers were scared. And so as this story goes on, true to the end, the brothers tried to develop yet another scheme. Remember, they said, well, let's go tell Joseph that our father Jacob said he needed to forgive us. Well, it's hard to know how this whole story was going to come out at this point. But much to everyone's surprise, it ended up in tears. And it ended up in redemption and forgiveness, rather than the brothers receiving their doom. So it seemed that there was still going to be some life to this covenantal promise made to this ancient nomadic family, which had found its way to Canaan. Joseph could have brought about the demise of his brothers. And I wonder how we would have reacted in the same situation. Well, I must confess, I'm not sure I would have had the charity that Joseph showed to his siblings. What about you? Even if he was the proverbial spoiled brat, it is not unreasonable to suggest that he did not deserve what seemed to initially be his fate. And it certainly seemed, as we're listening to this story, that Joseph understood both what it meant to be in paradise and in wilderness. He saw his fair share of both wilderness and paradise. And he also had learned firsthand how quickly one's fate could change. Well, so far in our excursion this year in Genesis, we've seen Adam and Eve and the implications of eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and we considered how we might see the concept of free will as being something that emerges in this ancient story. We joined last week Abram and Sarai as they experienced this unfolding story of covenant and what seemed a nonsensical promise that came to them from God, who intruded into their lives and who told them that they would have, of all things, at advanced age, land and offspring. The covenant, the backbone of our Hebrew text, became most real in this story. And we also saw Abram and Sarai take the situation into their own hands because they were not seeing the expected results of this promise with God. And perhaps they were really wondering, can we even trust this God? Can we trust God? Well, in today's story, we've skipped a couple of generations to deal now with the drama of Joseph. So what do we have here? Well, as was stated so beautifully at the beginning of the lesson, we see a parent who has shown preferential treatment for a particular child, in this case, Joseph. We see how this has contributed to an intense sibling rivalry, and we don't know anything about these things in our modern culture, right? We saw his brother Reuben try to save him from his fate, but he was too late. And when times turned bad in the land of Canaan, they had to leave the land that they had been promised, the place that they had gone to in hope. They were seemingly giving up their birthright to go find rescue in Egypt. Well, the father of the clan, as we're told, Jacob, died, and when they realized their fate might be now in Joseph's hands, they were panicked, and they once again, as we said, they tried to create another scheme, and it ended in a most surprising way, because in spite, friends, of all the bad choices, the hurts, everything that had gone wrong, there's this surprise ending that includes forgiveness and redemption. Joseph, who could have easily had revenge on his brothers, instead chose another way. Let's be honest. These stories from these ancient writings are difficult for us to consider. And it's not because they were written so long ago. I believe it's because they hit way too close to home. The people in these stories are flawed, sometimes seriously. bad choices which create series of events that sometimes have tragic endings almost seem to be the norm. And we want to believe that because we are people of God, we're somehow immune to these kinds of behaviors. And then when we pause, we know reality teaches us something different. You see, I believe the problem in these stories for us is that we can too easily find ourselves in them because they are mirrors. These ancient stories are mirrors to the reality of our human condition. So are these stories, friends, simply a statement about the problems that we seem to so easily create, or is there something more to them? Is it just a comment on the human condition? Well, there's a hint in the end of this story with Joseph. Remember that Joseph all of a sudden is yielding forth grace-filled action, forgiveness, and it's most it represents redemption in this narrative. In a narrative where it seemed the ending would be doom. And while we don't necessarily see God intervening per se, Joseph's statement, "Do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people as he is doing today." So are we to interpret this statement as an acknowledgement that all of the events of this story were God's doing? Absolutely not. It is an acknowledgement that in spite of all of the missteps, in spite of all of the broken dreams and the anger and the hurt feelings, God can still be at work. The God who created is a faithful God who is able to work within us to help redeem when redemption seems absolutely impossible. The God who loves the creation, the God who redeems, the God who is always faithful is there. God does not abandon, even when terrible choices are made. Instead, God does the work of redemption. You see, this story of Joseph really is ultimately one of hope, and it's a message that we desperately need for the time in which we live. When we look around, we know that we are in need of redemption. We know that our actions are having far-reaching consequences for this marvelous planet Earth that we call our home. God's creation is in danger. We know that racism and oppression reappear in each and every generation. God's children are still in danger. We know that people of faith can just as easily lose our way, teaching a perverse kind of message which justifies exclusion and vilifies those who are different, clinging tightly to theologies which are more about control and power than giving new life. God's beloved community is in danger. Sometimes we may even wonder if redemption is possible. When a week rarely goes by, when we haven't heard of law enforcement and shootings and the loss of life, we wonder. When the level of political discourse seems to have lost any sense of rationality, when hatred and lies and fear-mongering have become the norm, we wonder. When the immigrant, the sojourner, is only viewed with suspicion and fear, we wonder. When platforms and positions and posturing are more important than people, we wonder. We wonder if redemption is even possible. But just when we think we may as well give up, we know better. when we pause and we look around, when we filter out all of the noise, we realize and are amazed that God is present, that God is there. We realize that this faithful God is miraculously present in people and ways we never imagined. Just as was in the case of these stories like this one of Joseph that were spoken so long ago. When we pause and reflect, we realize that God may have even been at work in our lives when we thought it impossible. Perhaps, friends, our task is to spend more time looking for the holy in the everyday, looking for the evidence that God is at work. Our task, friends, is to be part of this process of redemption, partnering with God so that justice is our reality, so that oppression will be no more, that we can celebrate the fact that we are indeed all children of God and are one family. So friends, what is God asking us to do? Where might we find hope? Where might we find redemption? How can we be a part of that ongoing, most important work? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.